hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of This Week in Mormons. I am your noble host, Jeff, with my co-host,
Al Esquire.
Al Esquire is with me. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great. I am very good. Actually, I'm very sore. I just got back from a 3 to 4 day Moab Fruita mountain biking adventure.
That sounds pretty fierce.
It was truly epic, and because it was my second bike ride in 2 years, I have like a uniblister across each of my hands. They've connected and shared terrible juices, which is exceptionally painful. And my seat is very sore. But besides that, doing wonderfully well. I have a new fantastic tan on the tops of my arms and my knees.
Yes. So
women love that, actually.
I'm sorry to hear about your massive blister and the pains you're experiencing in your posterior at present.
I find it to be it's worth it. It's worth it because of the hot farmer tan that I'm working now. I mean, chicks are digging it. Seriously.
Really, the farmer tan you're working on now that you're living in a more major metropolitan area and not on a farm?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's how I get the
Do you see the irony in that statement?
That's how I'm getting the women that I'm going for. See, Mormon women, when they see the farmer tan, they're like, oh my, this man values modesty. I want him. And so I just slip it up a little bit, and I'm like, hey, it's white from here up. And they're like, ooh, what's that arm tan going on there? Mmm, daddy.
And they know that you are someone who values your body.
That's right. Or that I mountain bike in a t-shirt instead of a jersey. Either one. So what about you, man? How'd your week go?
Oh, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, I don't know what that means. Anyway, the week's been fine. I'm glad we're getting this recorded. That's all right now.
For those listening, you might appreciate the fact that we're doing this at about midnight.
We do this. Now, a lot of this is my fault. You see, I could tell my old hard drive on my laptop was near the point of failure. I was just doing a few funky things, and I said it might be the time to invest a little bit of money into a bigger one and a faster RPM one, because we're, you know, finally about 7,200 RPM is standard now on laptops, finally. So anyway, I got a new laptop drive. I got a new drive, and I've spent the week installing it and reinstalling Windows and reinstalling all of my software and blah, blah, blah. The one thing that was on the back burner, though, was reinstalling all of my recording stuff for this lovely podcast, and I have spent the past 2 hours toying with that, leaving poor Al stuck in an office waiting for me. So
I've been having a grand time on Hulu, so
have you really?
Anyway, let's go ahead and jump into it, man.
You want to jump into it? This is the weakest banter ever. What is wrong with you? I'm trying to think if anything else went on this week.
We got a ton to talk about.
What else went on this week with me?
Nothing, Jeff.
I did go to Disneyland, which is always a good time.
Your life is so complicated and scheduled. You have no time to install audio drivers because you're scheduled into 15-minute increments.
I have relationships to maintain and jobs to seek. There's only so much that can be done. I mean, you know, sometimes you just need a break. And what's the best kind of break? You go to Disneyland on Thursday night.
So true. So true.
You get that corn dog. You have that Dole Whip. You get good cookies by Splash Mountain. Now, I know you don't love Disneyland very much, Al, because we talked you into going once when you lived down here with me.
Right.
And you were, suffice it to say, underwhelmed.
Well, it's a park for children, Jeff.
It is not a park for children. It is a park for families.
I'm well over 7 years old. And Goofy no longer, I'm not going to say that. Never mind.
You are a jerk.
Well,
he's a visionary.
Disneyland for those. It's
were
like
you about to say
Disney,
you were about to say like Disneyland for those who don't know. Like,
no,
you're
well,
explain
I'm, well
Disneyland
I'm explaining
to people.
I'm explaining the idea that Orange County people just go there on the weekends. You'll buy season passes to just go hang out and pick up chicks in the face painting
line.
Okay.
Okay, you're already thinking of one particular individual who is married now, 1 week on.
Bless her heart.
So, yeah, but let's put this in perspective, sir. You growing up in your podunk village outside of Kansas City or whatever like that, when feudal lords were able to sleep with virgins the night before their wedding, you're able to do all kinds of weird stuff out there. What do you guys do? You go to the hog hike thing and watch.
We have a very grown up demolition derby that we.
You have demolition derbies.
Thank you very much.
You see, if you grew up in a place that had civilized society, you would.
You mean a society of mice and cute dogs dressed up as people?
Is this all you can do for Disney? You only mentioned Mickey and the two different dogs. You need to branch out on your horizons.
All right.
There is Stitch. What a wonderful, lovable character from a horrible movie about Hawaii. Who doesn't love Stitch?
Okay, enough.
I am just saying you need to give it a chance. I'm just saying.
I loathe Disneyland because of its $60 entrance fee and terrible food.
That's understandable. But you should read my review on Yelp about Disneyland. It's quite entertaining, actually.
I will. I'll look it up.
I had a few likes and funnies, and I had some good feedback on it, so I guess we'll shut up now. Yeah, thanks, Al. I really appreciate it. You're a sweetheart.
All right.
Has anybody ever told you that?
You have, twice.
You're the nicest person I've ever met in my life.
While I waited up 2 hours for you to get your audio drivers installed.
That's really because you had nothing to do. You moved to a new place. You have no friends. You just have random people on trails that want to sell you drugs.
I hate so much the way that you choose to be.
That's paraphrasing the exact quote, but yes.
All right.
Thank you, Michael Scott. So today, my dear friends, we'll be talking about a great number of things. A lot has been happening in the Mormon world today. So there's some guy named Unga, and Al's going to talk about him. And then you might have heard that there is going to be a South Park musical, but a musical based on the Book of Mormon from the creators of South Park. So who knows how that'll be. There's also a new documentary that's been greenlit about Proposition 8 in California, the oft-mentioned protection of the family measure that most of you are probably familiar with. We have some statistics on church growth. Far West gets its first ward ever. The church might be going bye-bye in India. And our usual shout-out to some sort of idiot and to wonderful things that are covered in church-related news or Mormon-centered news that don't need coverage at all. I have one word to explain that, and her name is Evelyn.
All right, so leading in, this week, Harvey Unga, the star BYU running back, announced that he was just withdrawing from BYU due to an honor code violation, while his girlfriend did the exact same thing. Over at the Sporting News blog, they are speculating, and I think it's pretty, it's pretty easy to connect the dots when a guy and his girlfriend both withdraw at the same time over honor code related issues. I think they're probably not too far off in saying that it's probably sexual related or, you know, maybe a pregnancy thing, which would also be sex related, I guess.
Really?
The whole biology of things.
Yeah. Probably.
But first, a tragedy for BYU football because Unga is great and just an upstanding guy. I've had the chance to meet him as they've done like firesides. They traveled around and did cool stuff like that. I think he's a very nice fella. The thing that the Sporting News blog points out that I kind of wanted to underline here is its closing little statement. Just in talking about the fact that Unga is having to withdraw from school due to having sex with a girl that he's planning on marrying. And he says, when reminders like this trickle out about BYU's stringent honor code, the athletic accomplishments of various Cougar teams seem even more far-fetched. How could a college that offers totally non-stereotypical college experience recruit on par with major college programs? It's like every BYU season is full of the Catholics versus convicts storyline that Notre Dame and Miami dealt with, except the morally rigid Mormons against everybody else. And
yeah.
Now Harvey Unga and Kehlani Moy Kay won't be part of the next one, probably because of premarital sex in a relationship that might lead to marriage. That might be bizarre to me and you, but that's just how things are at BYU.
It is.
And so that's like so they're kind of criticizing the fact that Unga had to do this, or criticizing BYU and Unga for not fighting it more. I think it's kind of an upstanding move by Unga. I often would say, you see people that aren't living within the restrictions of the honor code while you're at one of the BYU schools. And my thought was, why would you choose BYU? You know, like, we're not, if you want to kind of do things a little bit differently, you're welcome to it, but don't pick a school that tells you not to. You know, there's a lot to be said, a lot of leeway so far as you know, living outside of the honor code and well within your Temple recommend bounds. But if you want to live outside those honor code restrictions, don't do it at a BYU school. And so props to Unga for you know, kind of taking what needs to be served in and withdrawing and moving on. I think it's the upstanding thing to do on
Yay.
His part.
Good job, Unga. Good job. You broke the honor code and you're standing by it. Good man.
No, it's. I think it's, you know, this is going to be a hard thing to do, especially if you could just like push it under the rug, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who cares if, you know, if you don't get caught, who cares? But here, one, I'm not sure if Unga was caught or if he came out with it, but the fact that he's not pushing the matter, that he's not trying to be sneaky about it or trying to use the fact that he's an athlete, which we know has been leveraged in the past.
To keep him
in there. The fact that he's just withdrawing and going elsewhere. I think it's just a great move.
Yeah, if he's owning up to it, I think that's a good thing. And like you said, yeah, athletes are kind of noted in BYU lore for getting away with perhaps more than they should. Am I right?
Yep.
That's what they tell me anyway. And so good for him. You know, if he's got... Well, you said something, though, that I want to comment on, where you said that, you know, why come there if you're not going to live by the honor code? I get that, but at the same time, there are many people that go to BYU that... have different interpretations of their own spirituality or what the church means to them. I'm not justifying it, but that's how it is. Or especially when it's a case of athletes, most of them are there on scholarships. BYU has a great football program, so why would you not want to go there? You get a lot of exposure that way. So, you know, you may think that you're not going to be the most obedient honor code person, but you do it anyway because it's a good ride. It might not be the most ethical thing to do because you know what the university stands for, but people act in self-interest regardless of ethics. And I know that, like, if I were not LDS, this is a different example, and I went to BYU, I get that living the honor code would be the right thing to do because I have signed on to it by living there. But at the same time, if it represented religious views that weren't my own, I would see less incentive. I'm sure if I weren't Mormon but I were going to BYU, I wouldn't care about a lot of the aspects of the honor code.
But I'd have absolutely no sympathy for you when you were like, that's so stupid that I can't grow a beard. I hate that.
Yeah.
It's those kind of arguments that kind of...
But by that logic, you're saying that we should... For those, this is a whole different discussion, but this is almost like saying there are aspects of the honor code that we should not call into question. And I don't think that's the case at all. The beard thing being one of them. This is off topic, but I think that I think the honor code needs to be revisited for many things like that, as far as beards and whatnot. Not to let men look like chumps or anything like that. But you've got guys that look scraggly in all kinds of different ways, and you've got some guy who could be a well groomed person with a well groomed beard. And I don't see anything wrong with that. They didn't get rid of beards at BYU until the mid to late 60s, when it started to be associated with, you know, hippies and surfers and the crazy evil things that they represented.
No, I agree. That's when they banned them. There's room to modernize, and I'm not saying that, but I'm saying you shouldn't be shocked when all of a sudden you're called on it, because you knew going in, right?
I agree with you there. Yeah, you shouldn't pretend you're surprised, because hello, it's right there. Clean as crystal, clear as crystal. Crystal is involved somehow. So do the right thing, people. In my case, like for the many children that I fathered while I was at BYU, I got away with it because I was part of BYUSA. And, you know, you can do whatever you want when you're in BYUSA. It's great.
And now you're part of the Jeff Openshaw lore. It's beautiful.
Yes, I am. I can guarantee there is absolutely no mystique surrounding me in Provo today.
But your generations to follow, and all those mothers that tell stories of the father that once was.
That once was, and they will say, "There he is, son. There he is." You see that? You see that? That factory worker right there? That's your daddy. So let's. I'm going to move on here. There is going to be a Book of Mormon Broadway musical. Now, we don't know many details about this because this was just announced this week from Trey Parker and Matt Stone, who are the creators of South Park. I'm not much of a South Park fan, but I am familiar with the fact that they have sort of taken a liking to the church. They don't really bash the church on South Park. I think they kind of tease about some
aspects of the church. One of those guys is Mormon.
I've heard so many different things about that. They say they just grew up with a lot of Mormons. I've heard one of them is like a lay Mormon or a lapsed Mormon. I don't know what is actually true when it comes to that. But given their history with the show, and there's another... are you familiar? I don't even want to say the name of the movie. Were you familiar with a movie that came out roughly 10 years ago?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Starring Matt Stone about a missionary who gets into a rather...
shady industry.
A lurid industry in order to, quote, pay for his temple wedding. Yes.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah. If for anyone who doesn't know what it's called, it rhymes with Bor Blackmo.
No, Bor Blasmo, or, I think or, would be
sure. I was trying to avoid making the rhyme too obvious for the sake of our youthful listeners. So they have some sort of draw to it, whatever that may be. And that movie, I'm ashamed to admit, in my reckless youth of whenever that was, year after high school.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, because it came out.
Jeff, I'm shocked.
It was back in the day when I was not judicious with my viewing habits. And of course the draw was there. I mean, come on, you're Mormon. There's this weird movie about this odd idea and this and that. So, yeah, it was terrible. Anyway, they are going to make a Broadway musical about the Book of Mormon. And I get how some people are going to be up in arms saying that this is going to be this huge problem for the church. And then there are those that, many of whom are South Park fans, that think it'll just be sort of a worthy satire. The one thing I wonder, though, is... they say it's a Book of Mormon musical, so I don't know if this means they'll name it that, but it'll just be about Mormons, or if this will actually be going into like Nephi, and a musical based on the Book of Mormon. No idea, because they just announced it. There aren't any specifics. It's not supposed to be until next year, but
the one quote by the guy they picked to be the lead, though, I think is a little telling, where he says, "It's great. It offends everyone."
Oh,
so,
yes.
So we have that to look for. I don't think it's going to be anything cheery but I love one of the bloggers that commented on it. He was like, "This is exactly what we've been waiting for. The Jews got Fiddler and now we've got the Book of Mormon musical."
Yes.
I was like, I don't know that it's going to be in quite the same vertical, but
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, it'll be. I do love the quotes. And then it says, "Start spreading the news. Mormons meet Manhattan." Oh, boy.
Huzzah!
So we're going to have to see how this turns out, or those of you that see it. I understand a lot of the production team is also the same one behind Avenue Q. So.
What is Avenue Q?
Avenue Q was sort of I don't want to call it a spoof, but like an adult twist on Sesame Street.
Ugh.
That played in Vegas and this and that. It was wildly popular. So it'll. Obviously, the curiosity will be there, especially if they do like the real Book of Mormon, if it isn't just sort of about Mormons, but try to make it a period piece about the Book of Mormon. It could be fascinating for all ages. Yep.
And then just by way of announcement then.
You want to move on? You don't want to talk about this no more?
Well, I think it's something that is probably inevitable that it happens. I think that the South Park guys, I mean, they paint us in kind of a weird, quirky, skewed light, they've never been outright like aggressive against the church.
No,
and so
unlike.
So, yes,
I was trying to segue into your next bit, but with greater public exposure, things like this are normal. I mean, you know, it's no one thinks twice about making the movie The Ten Commandments back in the late 50s, right? To tell one of the stories in the Bible. No one thinks twice about making stories about the Bible or other respected things in Scripture. And with greater public exposure, it's only natural that eventually people, even not of our faith, are going to try to dramatize and...
dramatize, maybe.
Thank you. Dramatize and capitalize on Mormonism stuff, even if it's not what they believe. But they're going to try to do it because it represents a market. So
I don't think that this is a terrible thing. I mean... it could be. I may be eating my words, but
yeah, you will.
I think it'll be one of those things. Maybe it will be a well done satire. Probably not, though. It'll probably be
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
But like, anyways, sorry. And now I'm going to go back to my segue for what we were saying. That
unlike, this
will be not mean-spirited necessarily. Unlike
the Proposition 8 documentary that we mentioned a couple shows ago. We wanted to just kind of follow up on that. It's been picked up by a distributor, which in the way documentaries work, they film the documentary, they go to like a Sundance Film Festival or something, some kind of equivalent like that, where distributors shop around for good, well done documentaries, then they pick them up and distribute them. So once they have a distributor, that's where they can actually kind of get a They become more mainstream, and you can rent them on Netflix and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So the news is that they were picked up by a distributor. They are going to take the film as is, and they're pushing it right into the distribution channels. So if nothing else, we'll be able to at least see the way they did it. From what I understand, they really skewed the church in a bad light. Obviously, if you're trying to endorse the opposing side of Proposition 8, that would be very easy to do. But I doubt anything dramatic comes from this, but just by way of announcement, they have a distributor. So look forward to those conversations around the water
cooler.
Good
for them. It's always funny to see how documentaries try to address Mormonism. I'm sure you remember what was it? Was it about 3 years ago when PBS did that documentary of the Mormons? You remember that?
Yep.
And it was pretty okay, but it felt like the producers at least erred more on the side of criticism of the church than being apologists. And I remember watching it. There was this and that, but it was pretty easy to watch it. And there were moments when you're like, really? Like, I swear they spent like an hour on the Mountain Meadows Massacre. And while that's a tragic and a controversial part of the church's past, it does represent a very, I don't want to say insignificant, but you know what I mean, a minor blip in the history of the church. And to spend a whole hour on it and then a whole other hour on polygamy, obviously isn't fair to the church, because for one, we don't even believe in polygamy anymore. And while it's an important part of our history, it's classic media skewing of the actual church's teachings in an attempt at sensationalism, and trying
hey,
to get
sex
audience.
Sells and sex in polygamy. I mean, that's going to sell a lot. So
by
I
the
think
way, do
were...
you, do you remember that they made a Mountain Meadows movie that came out that same fall?
Yeah. That flopped completely.
No one even knew it came out. I think John Voight was even in it. It had serious, I think John Voight played Brigham Young, and they portrayed him as some sort of like just crazy guy. Who knows?
I will not move from this place until the Lord has shown me what to do.
Is that your Brigham Young impression?
Yeah, that's from the House of the Lord movie.
I know. I love the House of the Lord movie.
That's my favorite quote from...
It's cheesy, but I love that movie.
The other great one is that Lorenzo Snow tithing one. I'm not sure what it's called, but you always watch that and you're just like, boy, he is a weird... weird grandpa-looking man. Whoever they got to play him did a really fruity job.
I loved The House of the Lord because I don't think I had a memory of seeing it until I found an English-language video of it on my mission, which was gold for us because we taught a lot of Africans.
Uh-huh.
And it was something we could actually watch with them other than, all of our other media was in Spanish. So I sat there and watched it once. It's an hour long, but you kind of justify it. Like, this is good stuff. We want to get these people, this couple that's been a member for like a year and a half, we want to get them thinking about the temple,
That's right.
And we watched it, and it was great. I remember the whole metro ride home. I was sitting there with my companion like, I love you, Elder. Oh, yeah. And I was genuinely just exuberant and almost euphoric. I don't know what that movie did to me, but he was really... He was really freaked out because he was like, what is wrong with you?
Well, understandably so, I think. Well, so by way of announcement, is while I'm announcing things, the BYU women's rugby team has been, they made their way into their championship and are refusing to play on Sunday. So
good for them.
It's making some pretty big news coverage. Props to them for standing by their beliefs, but I think it kind of brings up an interesting point where That line has been muddied and muddied and muddied, as I feel like, as I've grown older. It seems like that stark line of, no, we're Mormon. We don't play sports on Sunday. We don't do, you know, Sunday's a day for worship. It's not a day for sporting activities, yada, yada, yada. I feel like that's been so muddied over time, where, like if BYU basketball made it into the Final Four, I would have been shocked had they made a similar stand.
Yeah.
To say no. And I feel like they would have hid behind the thing of, well, it's good press for the church to make it that far, yada, yada, yada. You know, it's like the guys that decide to play pro sports. And I even wonder for myself, you know, if I got on a league team and they wanted me to play on Sunday 1 week, it'd be like, I wouldn't shaft my team, or would I? You know, how much is too much, or where's the line? And like I said, I feel like that line's really been muddied over time. And so props to BYU women's rugby for reminding us again of what we believe and how we need to endorse that and live by it.
Amen, Al. I'm applauding you right now.
What about you, Jeff? Like, in your...
I agree with you. And
okay.
I agree with you. I think it's a good message. There's funny things like that. Like, yeah, we try to justify it for the bigger issues. We can even go down to, and this is more minor, you know what always bothered me? That the honor code is stressed so hard, but that BYU cheerleaders, while not dressed like hoochies or anything, are still wearing sleeveless shirts.
Are they?
They do. Always baffled me. I'm like, how is this okay? I don't understand this. I get it that it's cheerleading outfits.
I've only ever seen them wear the long sleeve shirt under it.
I mean, because you get their cheerleading out, you know, because every program has its outfit. I understand that, because you might go see the ballroom dancers, or heaven forbid, the young ambassadors or something like that. And their outfits might not, aren't always in those lines, because I get that's part of the industry. But at the same time, you know, go to when there's places when you can better represent the mission of the church, even if it's something as seemingly inconsequential as modesty. Why would you not do it?
Well, but then you get into the argument of, you know, it's the same thing as swimming, right? You don't expect somebody that's a swimmer to wear a full body suit or even a complete modesty size wetsuit when they compete in swimming or diving or something.
Really?
That's,
have you seen the athletes from Muslim countries in the Summer Olympics?
I have. Awesome. And I don't think they're doing themselves any favors. The idea, of course, being that when you participate in a sport, you dress appropriate for that sport, right? And so it really comes back to is cheerleading a sport?
No.
I think the brethren have made their stance clear by saying, yes, it is.
Apparently.
Ergo, the cheerleaders can wear what they need to wear.
But at the same time, are we not then, it's one thing to say it's a necessity for a sport. I get that. But this goes back to the old debate. Remember back in the day when they were trying to stress that members do not remove their garments for seemingly inconsequential activities, remember, and they stressed the importance of that even when playing sports, because they knew a lot of people would take them off to play sports, and I think a lot of that's still a personal choice.
Wait, I thought that was, I always heard, well, there's like three R's or three S's.
Oh yeah, the three S's. I think the three S's is more urban legend than anything else, but that's why in recent years the church has made garments that are more conducive to strenuous physical activity, because they want to encourage people to not remove their garments so flippantly.
This, of course, is your interpretation. Yes.
No, it's what it is. I mean, that's why they released. They have like newer fabrics and this.
Says who? Maybe they released that because I'm allergic to cotton and poly mix.
There are still things that are a personal choice. When I go play soccer, I generally don't wear mine, and that's just my decision. What I'm saying
and
is,
I don't wear a single pair, or I don't own a single pair of Skibs, and so I have to wear.
Yeah. So I guess the only thing I mean is that I get it when you dress a certain way because of the needs of a sport or an activity or this or that. But at the same time, where there is room to make something so it is better with church standards, why wouldn't you do it?
Well, Jeff, if you've seen those cheerleaders do the splits and stuff and the twirling of the arms, the windmill motion, you can't do that with sleeves.
You can do that with sleeves.
No,
yes.
I disagree.
Yes.
Being a cheerleader myself in homeschool, not really. Okay, anyway.
Whatever, you are evil. I am.
Good,
so,
good, Good discussion, though. Good
Woo. All right. A little bit of news about LDS church growth from the Salt Lake Tribune. Some stats for 2009, of course.
Details.
We are seeing a lot more growth in different countries, especially in Africa and the Caribbean, percentage-wise. But, of course, the biggest numbers, just hard numbers coming out, are from the U.S. and Brazil and Mexico. It looks like in the United States, membership increased by about 85,000 members last year, which represents 26.8% of the overall membership increase for the entire church. Brazil is at 42,000 and Mexico is at 39. Those are bigger numbers, but when we look at actual big percentages, if you go to this link that we'll post on the page from the Salt Lake Tribune, you see that, yes, the greatest percentage growth comes from mostly Africa. You see some serious growth in some countries, all to the tune of... goodness, a lot of it in the 20s of percent. This does mean small numbers, of course. Take, for example, this is not Africa, but Slovakia, which had a growth rate of 15.8% to raise its membership to 161. So, and Rwanda, this is the amazing one, Rwanda. I'm surprised we have so few members in Rwanda. 159% growth rate to bring the membership up to 44 members in Rwanda. So, some interesting stats. It doesn't come as a surprise to me that it's growing in Africa. When I was doing some research for a paper last year, I was actually reading a lot about the growth of the church in Africa and why it hasn't been like South America. You know how it is in the church. We just assume South America, you go on a mission and stand there and just baptize people, right?
Right.
Which, of course, is obviously stereotyping.
You have to wear fish-proof pants because the fish will come and eat your clothing. You're in the water so much.
Yeah, something like that.
That's right.
And I read a lot of interesting theories about Africa, and without getting into too much of that, there are very good points, and a lot of that is that it's the churches struggled to find a balance between the much more traditional aspect of Africa's religions, even the ones that came from European colonization, and still merging that with the church, trying to find some sort of a balance with the way they've traditionally worshipped, which is far different from just, say, quiet Protestantism or Catholicism or what have you.
Well,
and the church is kind of late to the party in Africa as well. But
I think that's kind of a problem the church is facing all over the place. I remember while I was in Hawaii, they came out with a rule that said that you could no longer use the church buildings for Hawaiian or, like, local weddings, right?
Yeah.
And the reason was, you know, they would do the like a money dance where the bride goes and dances and everybody goes and puts money on her, and just, like, you know, it's a traditional thing. They go give her money. It's not sexual in any way. It's just a tradition that they do, and they didn't want that. You know, like, that was one of the things that they pointed out that they didn't want necessarily happening in the church or in a church building. And I knew several people that made really compelling arguments to the fact of, you know, look, you can't come to Hawaii and try and make us all like Utah. You know, you've got to give us some leeway to leave us in our own cultures. You know, the things that are cultural, let us have cultural. And the church is working on it. I know it's something that they're conscious of because they're really trying to not take, like, the Western style of management and make that part of the gospel, because it's not. The gospel goes forth, and, you know, then you live that within your culture, but you change your culture to meet the bounds of the church, not the bounds of the Utah kind of society, right?
Exactly. And you're bringing it up dead on. This is exactly a paper that I wrote sometime
really? Ago,
when I was in graduate school. If anybody wants, I'll include it, like a PDF link on the webpage if anybody wants to read it. I wrote about this, about the church's need to, whether the church's growth and the influence and the culture of the church, how much of that was actual LDS culture that was trying to go worldwide, or how much of that was somehow Utah or American culture that was coupled with it, that was being exported abroad. And that's what we deal with, these conflicts that we find elsewhere when, you know, are we saying, are these more, is this church value, or is this really just an American value that, because of the inherent American bias in a lot of church culture, we are trying to put on these other cultures and societies? And as the church globalizes the way it has been, especially in the past 15 years, it's hard to reconcile those two. And especially somewhere like Africa, or like you said, Polynesia are probably the two best examples of societies that have these different traditions and this and that, which aren't bad, which don't violate church doctrine. But at the same time, the church is trying to encourage its members to not leave these things, but to embrace them more as cultural things to enjoy, but to embrace the church, you know, the gospel as it is. Like I read that for some of these congregations in Africa, the problem was they like to worship by banging drums and doing stuff like that, and that works for them. And a lot of them were wanting to like still do that in sacrament meeting for music. And they said, no, you can't do that. But they've tried to find a halfway point that said, well, if you want to have an informal service during the week where you can do this, we can work this out. And the church has faced a lot of obstacles with that. I think it's clearly...
Yeah, to the church's credit, they have a committee that's focused entirely on, you know, kind of sifting through this. Because, yeah, you know, you take the gospel to Asia, you're going to have a completely different set of factors than you're going to in Utah. And so for a lot of years, they were just, you know, they would say, listen, you come to church in a shirt and tie, and that's just the way it's done.
Yeah, and stuff like that, exactly, yeah.
And so to the church's credit, it's something they're conscious of and working towards, so.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, I know they're all over it. Yeah, exactly, like you said, the white shirt and tie thing, how much of that is that we know that's a good church thing, but in a lot, same thing, in a lot of African countries, they like to wear their traditional tribal wear to church.
Well, and I like to wear what Joseph Smith wore. I mean, give me some tailored breeches and a nice ploofy shirt with a bow tie.
That's I'm talking about.
That's what I'm wearing.
So just we'll post the link up here for the growth. The interesting thing about a lot of this growth, especially the African growth, is most of it is in Central Africa. Not a lot of it's in the Western countries. It's all in Angola, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, all those countries right there. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Didn't they mention that a lot of it is underreported as well? Because they still have a lot of unofficial.
Oh, I can only imagine. Yeah,
congregations that are meeting. You know, they classify themselves as Mormon, but the church hasn't been able to go to them yet, right?
Yeah, you got to wonder how many member how the work. I'm really struck by the Democratic Republic of the Congo because everywhere on this list. You don't have huge membership numbers in most of the countries that we're dealing with here. But Democratic Republic of the Congo, 23,000 members in the country. So that's pretty substantial, and I've been surprised. I've seen a lot of stake organizations in the church news as of late and over the past couple of years. And that's good, especially considering the country was just destroyed by the war that spilled over from Uganda for a long time. So it'll be interesting to see, I guess, if Democratic Republic of the Congo might become one of those centers and those hotbeds of church growth in Africa, you know, somewhere that we could see a temple in coming years, perhaps. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. So
that'd be crazy.
Anyway.
So again, by, you know, just kind of an unofficial announcement, because it's by no means official. We're saying it.
So
there's no press release from the church, but I have it on good word that today was organized the Far West Ward, back in Caldwell County, Missouri. This is significant. It's the first time that award's been back in Far West since the leaving of the Saints back in the 1800s. So it's
awesome.
It's been a long time coming. I mean, it shows quite a bit of progress on a lot of fronts. And you know, kind of a cool thing. It's not really significant for, you know, any historical thing or anything like that. It just shows that we've kind of come full circle. Kind of the same significance of getting a temple in St. Louis, the fact that we had a temple in Missouri again was big news because of, you know, how much persecution we suffered while we were there. So
yeah,
right back in Far West, it's good news. Very, very cool for the church back there.
It's good to hear. That's like, yeah, you know, when we rebuilt the Nauvoo Temple, you know, it's just great stuff, just for nostalgia's sake, if anything, but it's good to see that.
Yeah, well, and you know, I look like the church is really growing back in the Kansas City area. They've got a temple going there, ward right there. It's great that it's finally not a fledgling ward.
Definitely.
Or branch, I mean, yeah.
You are living the dream, sir.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
Amen.
And on sort of the antithesis of that, my sources tell me, this isn't published anywhere, but I have on good faith that the church is experiencing some difficulties in India. Apparently, India reportedly is going to cease issuing visas to like any member of the church that's not Indian, obviously. So they're not kicking people out per se, but they will not renew any visas. So this applies to missionaries, mission presidents, anyone who's been called there, is my understanding. will have be called Elsewhere. And I haven't heard much of anything about this from the church, but apparently we might be seeing all missionaries just slowly trickle away from India. And whether that will mean complete disorganization of missions in India, they don't have a ton of members there. I mean, they could still have missions like they do in Colombia and Venezuela. They only have natives of those countries serving in them. But it'll be interesting to see. The church is pretty young in India, and it just surprises me because India is an open democracy. And this kind of goes with some of the things we were talking about last week, you know, with the debate about the UN Charter. That India is an open democracy. It has a bit of a different society. But if India is giving the church the boot, that is a sad thing indeed. Because they just, well, I remember when we talked about restructuring of missions a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
A month and a half ago. It was one of our earlier shows. And part of that was they created new, I think they created a new mission. There was one mission in India, and I think they split it and made a second. And now, you know, it's interesting to see. So,
Well, it should be noted that they're not kicking the church out. They're just kind of being punks about it. I know,
my understanding, yeah.
I know for a fact that, you know, this happens rather frequently kind of across the board where somebody will do something or say something, and all of a sudden there's visa trouble for a couple of months.
Yeah.
The fact that this is significant is just that, you know, it's such a small, the number of missionaries in India is very small, and the ability for the members to kind of carry on the momentum with the, you know, in the absence of missionaries would be kind of non-existent. So,
yeah.
Any hiccup in the work there is kind of really, really a big deal for you know, that area.
It is a big deal. It's just cool to think that we have missionaries and members in countries like that where you don't think about there being members. I remember when I was in the MTC, there were elders from Pakistan, which is a whole different ballgame because that's a Muslim country. We don't have any active missionaries there. And in all these countries like this, it's generally the product of some native of that country going abroad and eventually joining the church and coming back and having a strong enough testimony that they tell their friends. It's remarkable that we have congregations in countries like this where there is no formally organized missionary effort, and we have wards that are made up of natives. There are other wards, of course, that, like, say, in Saudi Arabia, where you have or there's a Persian Gulf stake, but the majority of it is all just foreign workers that all work for oil companies or government. Or this and that. But it's not like this. It is actually native members, and yet there have never been missionaries or haven't been for some time. And I think that's pretty remarkable. It's amazing to see how well the church hangs on. And you can see stories like that even today or even in the past during the Cold War when there were no missionaries in Eastern Europe. And yet many of these members in little congregations survived and persevered through decades and decades, so that there was still a base for church work after communism fell. So it's amazing to see how well the gospel weathers the storm of any of that variety. So I'm confident that regardless of what happens, there will still be the spark of the gospel in India.
'Tis true. All right.
Oh, well, and now we have our two things. I get to lead this one off.
We're running out of time, so be quick.
Your face is running out of time. All right.
Monster.
I'm just going to read this because it's short. I'm going to read it verbatim because that's, I think, the best way. From ABC Channel 4 News in Utah. Article, former BYU student could face life in prison for, quote, April Fool's, unquote, joke. Salt Lake City. He called it an April Fool's joke, but prosecutors say it is no laughing matter for the former BYU student who was arrested for attacking a woman with a stun gun. Now he could face life in prison. 20-year-old Stetson Geo Hallam.
Yes, thank you, Stetson. Thank you.
That is a real
Stetson.
Name. Is accused of attacking a woman he knows from his LDS ward at Brigham Young University.
It should be noted he was her home teacher.
Does it say that?
Elsewhere. Yes.
As reported by the Daily Herald, Hallam lured the woman into a laundry room as part of a scavenger hunt. He then used a stun gun on her arm and handcuffed her, and he is charged now with a first-degree felony charge of aggravated kidnapping.
Stetson, you idiot.
Stetson, who are you? And were you raised in Tooele? I mean, what is going on here, sir?
The funny thing about that is it plays to every BYU Provo stereotype I could possibly think
of. Well, to the extreme, yes.
It's like, let's go on a scavenger hunt. That'll be fun. I like you. Meet me in the laundry room.
Zap.
Then he tasers her and handcuffs her.
You know this guy's actually undoubtedly from Linden. He has to be.
From Linden. The slums of Provo.
He has to be from Linden. I mean, it's the only way it is. So There you are, Stetson Geo Hallam.
Our idiot of the week. Yes, what, indeed.
What controlled substances were your parents abusing when they named you, first of all, let alone raised you to think this behavior was okay? But Stetson, isn't Stetson like a brand of like cowboy-esque musk that men are supposed to wear or something like that?
And a fabulous hat.
Maybe I'm just thinking of the hat. Yeah.
Well, it's both. It's both a musky scent and a hat.
Stetson, you are a weird, weird man, and I shameth thee.
Thanks for getting us in the news. You're really doing us all a favor, Stetson. But
goodness sake.
On the other side of that, somebody who truly is getting Mormons in the news for good, Miss Evelyn. Wait, I have a last name. Miss Evelyn Henderson.
I love Evelyn Henderson so much.
I love her too.
She is like Janice Kapp Perry with food.
She has already won the entertaining appetizers category of the Pillsbury Bake Off with her salmon pecan crusted tartlets.
Stop
and
it.
She's from Roseville, California. She's going on for the $1 million prize in the Pillsbury Bake Off. And her comment, when asked how she came up with the idea, she said she came up with it when making a tuna melt and thought she could use salmon and pecans to give it a twist. So if that doesn't get your mouth all salivating, I don't know what will.
I love salmon. I love pecans. Why can you not combine the two into one delicious treat?
And if you get the chance, she just looks like a very happy, jolly woman. And I say, you go for that Pillsbury grand prize. And if she wins $1 million, she's going to be on Oprah. This is big news.
I thought you were going to say Pillsbury Grandma. You go for it, Pillsbury Grandma.
She's just a roly-poly, fun-loving-looking woman.
She is living the dream from Roseville. So all of those of you who are in the Sacramento suburbs that listen to us, if you know Evelyn Henderson, please, please let us know of her.
Or give her a bump from Twim.
Give her the Twim bump, and please get us some of her salmon pecan crusted tartlets.
Anything with crusty salmon, I'm a fan of.
Anything that is crusted with pecans and salmon sounds delicious. That sounds wonderful, and we love you so very much, Evelyn Henderson, for being awesome. And maybe she makes these for conference. Remember when we talked about
conference
food?
Boy, she could win a double whammy.
Okay, the funny thing is we make fun of terrible conference food that one time, right?
Yes.
I had terrific conference food, though, during conference, so I feel like a bit of a hypocrite here.
You've broke the mold, Jeff.
I was prepared a delicious concept of baked pancakes. I don't know that it was a traditional conference food, but it was bothering to make a gussied up meal just because general conference was on. So, but there was no tradition. The only tradition I have with general conference is feeling the spirit. Yes.
Well, congratulations on baking a pancake as well.
It's actually quite good. I should give you the recipe. It's very easy to make.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that's going to be it for us, I believe, this week, right, folks? Albert?
Thank you, sir.
And I'm call him Albert, because that is not actually his name. Well, Mr. Al, we bring this to you in the middle of the night so that you may all have it tomorrow morning. So, everyone, we hope you enjoy your week in Mormons. Al, thank you very much.
Paul Harvey, good day.
Good day. And this has been another scintillating edition of This Week in Mormons. Goodbye, everybody.
July.